policy and business elites gather in Switzerland at a time the U.S. economy has a comparative advantage. From 8 p.m. in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. It's the time of year when our January mood is lifted by the notion that other people are having a nice conference near the ski slopes in Switzerland. The annual World Economic Forum is convening in Davos at a time the U.S. is resurgent as other key economies lose steam. Marketplace's Scott Tong reports.
The U.S., growing at 5%, churns as the single engine in the world, so says the World Bank's top economist. So you'd imagine Davos types would talk it up. Adam Posen, president of the Peterson Institute for International Economics, says, yeah, but not quite. In the go-go 90s, he says, America was the model to copy.
This time around, the U.S. is winning the least ugly contest. Nobody's sitting here saying, oh, God, the U.S. has it right.
Sure, the U.S. got it right by buying bonds aggressively, he argues. But whose banks delivered the global crash again? Rich Lesser is president and CEO of the Boston Consulting Group. He thinks Europe's slump is the big story. Instability there makes firms nervous to invest.
Companies are just acting quite conservatively. And I don't, at least the conversations I'm in, unfortunately, I don't hear that changing too much in the near term.
Europeans see terrorist attacks in Paris, Russian aggression to the east, and bloodshed in the Mideast. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
After the big currency shift out of Zurich last week, that visit to Switzerland just got a lot more expensive for many of the Davos conferees. As we've been covering, the Swiss Central Bank let go of its peg to the euro without warning. That means everything costs 18% more in Switzerland today compared to the middle of last week. If you come from a euro country, 16% more for those converting from U.S. dollars. From time to time, one of America's top entrepreneurs joins us. Jules Pierri is CEO of The Grommet, a site that helps launch other companies' new products. Good to see you, Jules.
Good morning, David.
Now, by all accounts, your work at The Grommet is happy and energizing, but separately, you also think a lot about executive leadership. And what, you came across some disturbing data about female executives?
Yeah, higher incidence of depression among women CEOs. It can be quite a lonely and isolated place to be when you really reach that pinnacle to be a CEO. It's such a rare thing. 5% of Fortune 500 CEOs are women.
And so the implicit idea there is you may not have quite a posse, quite a team, role models as much as perhaps a male executive.
There's a sense of having to re-earn it every single day as a woman CEO. There's so much scrutiny of your style, of your actions, that is very palpable, and it's internal and it's external.
Now, when you and I talked in advance about maybe you weighing in on this topic, you were ambivalent. What are you worried people might draw from this discussion?
Well, remember, I'm an entrepreneur. For me, the answer here is for women to actually create the company so that instead of working inside or outside the box, let's create the box. Studies are even showing that women entrepreneurs, particularly in the U.S., are twice as happy as anyone who hasn't founded a company, and they're even happier than male entrepreneurs.
All right, so you're in this world. What do you think accounts for that?
When I talk to my friends who are in corporate leadership positions, women and men, but particularly women, I hear complaints. There's sort of an externality that they can't control, and it's a source of the complaints. When I talk to women CEOs who have founded their own companies, we're not complaining. We don't have the sense that the world is somehow confounding to stop us. The only thing we ever complain about, fairly enough, is investors. The rest of it, it's up to you to succeed or fail. There's no sense of greater actors around you determining your success, which you do have in a corporate environment.
We like to catch up from time to time with Jules Pierri, CEO at The Grommet. Fortune this last year named her one of the most powerful women entrepreneurs. Jules, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
The New York Times has an enterprise piece today about how the U.S. was able to blame North Korea so quickly for the huge theft of data from Sony Pictures. According to the Times, America's National Security Agency had already placed extensive taps into North Korea's computers with American spyware in place as long as 2 years ago. For the first time, the U.S. and the U.K. will soon conduct cyber war games with each other to test the hardiness of the financial sector, Marketplace's Nova Safo reports.
If private sector cyber attack simulations are like fire drills, then the government cyber war games are fire prevention. That's according to Joe Loomis, CEO of CyberSponse.
Government is more interested in infiltration and defensiveness than it is about process and remediation.
The latter, Loomis says, is what his company and others in the private sector do.
As soon as you're attacked, what are you going to do first? What data are you going to collect? How are we going to communicate if the network's compromised?
Loomis says there are still not enough companies running simulations.
Companies have been doing terribly because they haven't been testing.
Bruce Schreier is chief technology officer for cybersecurity firm Co3 Systems. He says Target, Home Depot, Sony, and others have been caught off guard by recent attacks.
So I think companies are realizing that this has been a hole in their security.
Global spending on all information security is expected to grow 8% this year to $77 billion. The cost of digital crime is estimated in the hundreds of billions. In New York, I'm Novosafo for Marketplace.
And app developers in Crimea, now part of Russia, have gotten notices from Apple saying they can't contribute to the App Store anymore because of Western economic sanctions. The publication TechCrunch also says Crimean developers of many online games are also cut off after similar notices from Valve, the Steam game clearinghouse. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.